from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point, Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. The Syracuse men's lacrosse team is struggling, but a big in-state matchup coming up for the Orange. Ben Shulman alongside Owen Valentine and Johnny Gadamowicz. Thank you so much for listening today. Make sure to subscribe to us wherever you're listening to the podcast or watching the podcast. Leave us a rating if it's Apple Music, Spotify. Hit that notifications button if it's YouTube. And as always, give us any feedback you have. You can tweet at us, leave comments on YouTube, like, dislike videos. We want to know what you like from the podcast, what you don't like from the podcast, so that we can cater it to you as much as possible and interact with you as much as we can. Guys, Syracuse coming off an 18-11 loss to Notre Dame, the second 18-11 loss of the season and the second loss in a row. The Orange are now 4-3, and this was really an ugly game against Notre Dame, Owen.
Yeah, any game that you have that involves a 12-2 run that's not in your favor, I think you can chalk up in the ugly game category because that is exactly what it was. This was a competitive game for a few minutes. And then into the second, things went and it just became Notre Dame goal, Notre Dame goal, Notre Dame goal, Notre Dame goal, Notre Dame goal. And then, you know, Syracuse scores back-to-back goals. It's a Syracuse lead again. And then it's 7 unanswered from Notre Dame to bring this one entirely out of reach. It's something that I remember was one of the bigger narratives of the 2019 season, was Syracuse sort of having to deal with opposing teams going on crazy runs. And fortunately for that 2019 team is they were able to dig themselves out of some holes. But the one thing that you did learn in that season is that it's not a sustainable thing to do. It's something that is very difficult to do. And right, I believe it was when they played Notre Dame back in 2019, it was that same situation. It was an early deficit. Syracuse got down 9-1 and then 11-2. And you try to pry your way out of that hole and it's just too much. And then in this one, you know, Syracuse started a little bit better. They get out to the early lead, but you can't let an ACC opponent, especially this season, when the ACC is as good as it is, you can't allow for a 5-0 run or a 7-0 run. And that's what Syracuse did against Notre Dame with just 2 goals in between. And that is why they lose by a 7-goal margin. And that is why they dropped their second straight ACC game.
Yeah, really just a tough game all around. You know, you talk about a team that really came into the year with expectations to be competing for that number one spot in the country, and maybe not quite at the same tier of a Duke or a Carolina down on Tobacco Road, but not too far off. And you fast forward now, what, 7 weeks in, we're over the halfway point, and they're just a game above 500 at 4-3. Now, look, their schedule hasn't done them any favors, and the 3 losses are all somewhat understandable. You talk about, obviously, a 1-goal loss against Duke. Then they got overmatched by a superior Notre Dame team this last time out. But at the end of the day, it's tough to win games when you don't control the possession battle. If you go back and watch the Notre Dame game from this past weekend, it seemed like practically the entire time the Irish had the ball. And that starts at the faceoff X. And, you know, as much as you want to pin it on the defense for not picking up the slack, or pin it on a Drake Porter for not living up to the hype of being one of, if not the best goalie in the nation, they can only do so much before it becomes a bend but don't break type philosophy. Notre Dame won the faceoff battle 23-9. Now, granted, they had one of the best Fogos in the country in Kyle Gallagher, even Duke the week before that in Jake Naso. So Jacob Faub, Danny Varello, we even saw a little bit of Jack Savage for Syracuse this past week. But those guys have had their work cut out for them. But if Syracuse really wants to turn the tide, keep an eye on those three, because Syracuse needs to start getting more possessions, especially against some of these tougher teams, because you just can't play defense for 60 minutes. That's not how you win.
Johnny, you said, you know, they might not be at the caliber of a Duke or North Carolina, and I agree. I just think the jarring thing is, you know, 5 days ago, I would have said they probably were at the caliber of a Duke or North Carolina, because SU nearly beats Duke. And then this loss to what was then the lowest ranked team in the ACC, Notre Dame, completely changes how people feel about this team. And maybe it's rightfully so, maybe it's not. But with the fact that you're going to play top 10 matchups against every ACC team this season, week to week, the expectations are going to change. And possession's been a big part of it. John Desco said in his press conference yesterday, on Tuesday, that they counted 42 possessions for Notre Dame in the game and 24 for Syracuse. That's not going to cut it in any situation. The faceoffs are a big part of it. Obviously, minus 14 at the faceoff X against Duke. They were minus 16 at the faceoff X. But the general ground ball game has been a focal point as well. Obviously, ground balls, faceoffs are correlated in a huge way. But Duke plus 14 on faceoffs, plus 25 on ground balls. So that ground ball battle is being won. Pardon me, Notre Dame, not Duke. That ground ball battle is being won by the Irish regardless. And SU is going to have to figure a way out, whether it's effort or positioning, to get to balls more often and get these possessions for the offense, or else they're not going to beat anyone, especially, you know, some of the teams they have coming up, like number two North Carolina.
Remember when we joked about last week that being the easiest conference game Syracuse has this season, and they come out flat, they come out, and as you were saying, it's those little things, those fundamental things, those things that as a coach, I'm sure you preach day in, day out, ground balls, face-offs, things you can control to an extent. And to just, as you said, now back-to-back games getting absolutely dominated in both of those statistical categories is tough. And you've got a game against Albany this week, but you're right back into the gauntlet after that. You've got a tough UNC game and then back-to-backs on the road against Virginia and Notre Dame. This the ACC, I don't think we have to stress anymore how good they are. You needed that game against Notre Dame because, as we said jokingly last time we came on here, that was your easiest ACC game. Obviously, easiest is a term we use loosely in that situation, but you've got an absolute gauntlet bookended by UAlbany and Utah. And UAlbany is, they're a team that has beaten you in the past, a team that can come into the dome and rise to the occasion. You've got a tough one with Albany, but then you've got three absolutely murderous games back to back to back. And you've got to be able to figure some stuff out, because you will not win ACC games if you aren't even competitive at the faceoff X. And you will not win ACC games if you get out ground balled. I don't know if that's how you say it, but I'm going to roll with out ground balled the way Syracuse did against Notre Dame.
All right, so we've hit on the possession battle. Something else I think that's definitely worthy of bringing up is that this first line of midfield sort of looks like a shell of themselves as of recently. You know, you want to talk about coming into the year, all three of them preseason to Waratahs watch type players, and Jamie Tremboli, Tucker Dordovic, and Brendan Curry. And it's almost like the second line midfield has been the talk of the town for the Orange. Now, I will cut them a little bit of slack, Tremboli, Dordovic, and Curry, in the sense that, you know, you watch a lot of these games. It's clear that opposing defenses are making it their mission to shut those guys down. I mean, they've been giving them little to no breathing room game in, game out, which I'm sure has to be frustrating for a guy like Dordovic, who thrives on having that open space to fire away from far out. Still, though, I mean, Tucker Dordovic might be the most prolific scorer on this Syracuse team. To look at some of these recent box scores, I mean, he was held scoreless against Notre Dame last time out. The time before that against Duke, only one goal. You can make a similar argument for Jamie Trimboli. One goal last time out against Notre Dame. And then against Duke, he didn't even register a single goal. So for me, as important as the faceoffs are, as important as the ground balls are, as important as that possession battle is, Syracuse needs to play to their strengths. And it's no secret that the strength is the midfield. Now, yes, the attack has picked up some of the slack. We've seen a guy like Chase Scanlon really burst onto the scene. Not that he wasn't on the scene before, but really reasserting himself as one of the top players on this team. Obviously, the emergence of Owen Hiltz. Stephen Rafis has really, you know, wiped away his label as a distributor and become just as much of a goal scorer, if not more. But Ben, could you imagine if this attack was also simultaneously clicking with the talent of this first line midfield? It's scary to think about what could be.
Yeah, and, you know, beginning of the season, overcorrection from defenses, they're going to get all up on the midfield. I now think coming into a game, as much as people still definitely respect the midfield, the attack has got to be the priority for most teams. I mean, how can you look at what Rafis is doing? You know, we're going to hear it to spoil a little bit from Scott Marr coming up. He directly mentions Rafis when we're talking about defending the Orange. Rafis is the focal point of the offense. Scanlon's the top goal scorer. Hiltz does a little bit of both. And really, Dordovic is the one producing on a more consistent basis for the first line midfield. Not to take anything away from Trimboli or Curry, but, you know, those guys, I think, in the grand scope of trying to game plan against SU, now might have opportunities. So there's still, you know, five games left in the season to make up some time. Trimboli's the most concerning one to me. Hasn't registered a hat trick yet this year. Only has 3 out of 7 games where he scored more than one goal, shooting below 40% after shooting nearly 50% last season. You know, he made such a big difference for the Orange. I thought he was the best player for SU last season, at least the best player on offense. If he can regain some of the form against a lot of Victor New York guys coming up for this Albany team, and of course he is part of that legendary Victor High School program, then Syracuse can be scarier. I don't want to say scary once again, because the offense is quite scary still, but scarier on the offensive front. And I agree, leaning on the strengths of the team is really important. And it will be important in this next matchup coming up tomorrow against Albany at 5 p.m. To talk a little more about the Danes, we sat down with Albany head men's lacrosse coach Scott Marr, who provided us with a lot of good insight into the UAlbany team. We have the pleasure of being joined by Albany head men's lacrosse coach Scott Marr today. Coach, thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ben. Thanks, man. Doing good.
So it's been a strong start to the season so far for the Danes, 5-2. How are you feeling about your team at this point in the year?
Good, really good. You know, I think we're hopefully starting to come out of the injury closet here a little bit. Got a bunch of kids that are just starting to get back to practice this week, which is nice. Get us back to closer to full strength. But we feel good. We've had some, you know, it's been a little up and down in a sense. We've had a couple really good wins and we've had a couple of tough losses. You know, but we feel like if we could find a consistency out of our group, we're going to be pretty good heading into our conference tournament.
Coach, I got to start by asking this. When you mentioned it, I believe briefly, the offense, the attack is a little bit different without Nanticoke out there. What are some of the big differences that you saw in that first time out without him, or actually the second time out this season without him?
Actually, it was the third time out. We didn't have him against Colgate and or UMass, and then yeah. and then this past weekend. It's just different. It's not. I don't think we're any better, any worse in a sense. It's just a different team. I think we play a little bit. More freer in a sense. Guys aren't gripping their sticks quite as much. It's a little bit more ball movement oriented. You know, the ball doesn't stop in a sense sometimes in Hogue's stick and you know, stuff like that. So, you know, again, it's just different. I think we play, like I said, I think we play a little bit more as a team. It's team offense. You look again at our goals, you know, against UMass, 10 out of 13 assisted. You know, the other day, 13 out of 17 assisted. So I think there's a lot more ball movement that occurs with this group. So that's kind of the biggest difference. But, you know, I got to ask you a question. Is that a Rangers jersey hanging in your bag?
It is a U.S. hockey jersey. It's Mike Ruzioni.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
So, Coach, you look at Syracuse. Obviously, you guys didn't see him last year due to the shortened season. Back in 2019, though, you took care of business, held them to just 5 goals. What went so well for you guys in that game, and how do you hope to replicate that tomorrow?
I think it was 2018, 15-5. That was a different team in a sense. I think in that game we had the ball quite a bit with TD on our team. I think for us, faceoffs are going to be huge. I don't think they're a great faceoff team per se, but you know, our wings got to do a much better job of getting in and helping our faceoff guy out. But you know, obviously possession of the ball is huge. But you know, you have to play a clean game. You know, you really do. You have to play as mistake free as you can. You know, turning the ball over, just by our own admission, really is not the way you know you want to go. We need to make sure we take care of the ball. We need to execute. You know, we need to execute our offense every time we had the ball on offense. But then to slow their defense, to slow their offense down, we're gonna have to play some really good defense. I think we've been playing pretty good defense all year, so it's a really good challenge for our team. But overall, I think it has to be, you know, as mistake free as possible of a game. We really have to play a clean game to win in the dome.
Yeah, faceoffs have been a sticking point for Syracuse this year. So perhaps a window for your team. Once the ball gets on offense, you know, now with this new look offense per se, obviously Hogg had a major impact last game, scored a career high 6. Who else gets more opportunities now? Are there one or two guys that kind of get to stand out with DeHoga not in the offense anymore?
Well, I think if you look at the games, again, that he did not play in, Kyle Casey's played very well in those games. Number 2, he's had probably 4 or 5 points in each one of those 3 wins. You know, Jacob Patterson gets to have the ball a little bit more in his stick and be a creator for us with the ball. And again, not so much that Dolga was a creator for us. Really, he really was a fantastic shooter. So, like I said, it doesn't change us that much. It just puts different people in his position. So, you know, you look at Corey Younger comes in, and Logan Tucker is a freshman. He's had a real nice season so far. But then again, we're switching up our system a little bit too. We're bringing in two more offensive guys on the offensive end as attackmen, what we call 4 and 5 men. So we'll only have 1 2-way midfielder on the field sometimes. So it gives a little bit more of our skilled players a chance to have the ball a little bit more. And like I said, it's all about us playing team offense. You know, Coach Thompson put in the saying that you know, Wayne Gretzky's dad passed away this year, and in hockey, he would say 5 sticks are better than 1. You know, we're saying 6 sticks are better than 1. So it's more about us sharing the ball and playing good, solid team offense. And then when whoever gets the opportunity, you know, to put the ball in the goal, they certainly, hopefully they can do that. But again, moving Graydon back to attack was a good move for us. Coach Thompson thought it was the best thing for us to have a good, solid finisher there in that spot. so that was a big move for us last week. And that opens up another opportunity for a midfielder to come in and play.
Coach, I've got to go selfish with this question here. I'm a Liverpool kid. I grew up with Jake Bastino being one of my brother's best friends, so we spent a lot of time at the house. What kind of player is Bastino, and just is he as big of a goofball within the program as he's been whenever he comes over?
Yeah, anybody that wears 2 cross earrings, you know, still in the 2020s is a little bit of a goofball. You don't see too many earrings out there these days. You know, Jake's a great kid. He plays hard, plays really hard. He's got a great motor to him, you know. But we just love his energy. You know, he is always smiling. He is always making some jokes. I talk to him quite a bit throughout the days in practice, and he is a lot of fun. He's a lot of fun to be around, but he just brings good energy to the team. You know, he's constantly hustling. He's constantly trying to make that next play. And And he's got wonderful stick skills and it's just his ability to pick off passes and to get the ball up off the ground. You know, he's really been huge for us. And he's been involved in a lot of our transition, you know, getting the ball up field and had a nice goal last week. So he's capable of scoring too at that end. But yeah, he's fun to be around, man. Jake's a good kid. And like I said, we bust on the earrings, you know, every once in a while. But you guys kind of had the same beard going. Yours a little shorter.
I know. His did he shave it? I thought I saw him. He shaved it for a little bit, but he's got that length going. I can't believe it. But neither of us really are killing it right here. So
yeah. I hear you. No, he looks good. He's got it nice and long right now. Kind of looks funny with the mask on, you know, the mask.
Oh,
and the
yeah. beard.
So, Coach, you guys come into this one off of a double-digit win against UMass Lowell. Syracuse, on the other hand, comes into this one after two straight losses. As outsiders, we don't really know this firsthand, but how much would you say momentum really does factor in? Like, does it feel like the pressure is on Syracuse almost to come out and right the ship and take care of business against you guys, considering that two-loss streak, whereas you guys come in off the double-digit win?
Absolutely. You know, they're definitely, I think they're ahead in both of those games that they end up losing. I think they're up by a couple against Duke early, and then they're up against Notre Dame early as well, and then losing those leads. So I think they're probably searching themselves a little bit to find out how they play a consistent 60-minute game. You know, I think any time we've gone in, even when we were ranked in the top five or so, I think you're still an underdog when you go into the Dome, regardless. It's a very difficult place to play. The echo will be even greater now with no people in the stands. So it's a unique place to play. And they certainly get up for it. And, you know, I'm sure they're looking at us as an opponent that's not coming from the ACC and we're coming from the American East. And, you know, there's a big difference between UMass Lowell and Notre Dame, you know, but we beat a really good UMass team last week. And we feel really confident that we could rise to the occasion and play really well against anybody in the country. So, but I do feel like we're an underdog and we'll go in as an underdog and we'll take that mentality with us.
I know that the answer that people get a lot when asked about how important is this game is that every game is important. You take it week to week, but is there something about, you know, this game, the two teams play every year. Now it's been, you know, an extended break because of COVID. Do you think this is one of, if not the most, your team is going to get up for a game this season?
Well, I think, again, you can't help but get up when you're playing a team that's won 11 national championships and is in the top five consistently and one of the better teams in the country. So, you know, you'd be crazy to say that you don't get up for this game. I think this is a game for us really for growth, to see how we play and to see how we can handle this type of pressure that hopefully we get into the NCAA tournament later on down the road. You know, and we've seen this before. That's why it's been such a pivotal game for us over the years, is that playing this type of caliber of a team, you know, then we used to play Hopkins, we play Maryland now, we play Cornell's, you know, so we play some highly competitive teams. And I think that prepares your team, you know, for those playoff type games, because this is kind of like a playoff type atmosphere. Every time we go there, you know, it's just, there is a lot of hype. And, you know, again, we've been fortunate to win two games here in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. So it's kind of a little bit more of a rivalry than it has been, you know, prior to us winning the first time. So, but yeah, I mean, this is, you know, this is fun. This is fun for our guys. This is why I told them the other day, this is why we play the game. You want to play in these types of games. You want to play against this type of competition. And, you know, again, I've always been grateful for John for putting us on the schedule years ago and keeping us on the schedule. So, you know, again, it's a fun place to play. And it's always a fun game. It's always entertaining in some way, you know, so hopefully not entertaining anywhere from me on the sidelines. That's for sure.
Coach, you guys have played every year since 2004. who is the biggest nightmare that you've coached against on Syracuse in that span? Who was the toughest guy to play against and to be able to strategize around?
Well, 2004 was Mikey Powell's senior year, so I'd have to say Mikey was probably the best player that we've played against.
Yeah, you know, start with a bang.
What's that?
Start with a bang with him.
Yeah, you know, him and you know, you look at like Brian Crockett, had 7 goals against us. Brett Bucktooth had a fantastic game against us in a 1-goal win for Syracuse. I think he had 6 goals. They've definitely had some key players and some outstanding players along the way. It's been a lot of fun to play them. You know what I mean? But you look at the days of Galloway and those guys in 08, 09, those guys were pretty good as well. And, they seem to have a laundry list of pretty good players, but we've been fortunate too the last 10 years or so. And even in the early times in 2006, 2007, my assistant Mayor Thompson was here and he's coaching with me now. But back then we had, a couple of Tour and Trophy type Frank Resiteris and Brett Queener and those guys too. So, and we feel really good about our team this year. I think we're a really balanced team. I don't think we necessarily have a superstar, but I think we do a nice job of really just, again, sharing the ball and playing together as a team.
Coach, we missed out on the opportunity to get the first game in this, long series between Syracuse and Albany. The first home opportunity for you, we missed out on last season because of, that cancellation. How much more energy, excitement is there going to be when the schedule finally brings us back to Albany?
I think it's going to be amazing. We obviously were planning for that game last year. We had already sold a ton of tickets. We were looking at probably about 10,000 people, for that game. They're going to put in temporary stands behind the goal, and we put up this new fencing and netting behind the goal just for that game, so people could sit on our hill and get our capacity up to about 10,000. So it was a huge disappointment, obviously, for the whole season, but that game in particular. And when they do come next year, and the reason why we put it back in Syracuse this year is so we could come back to Albany next year with fans. And John and I and Coach Simmons, we talked about it. It was like, didn't make any sense to play in Albany this year with no fans. Kind of took away from the whole purpose of us been playing here. So I think that will be as good as an event in college lacrosse as you've seen in a long time for a regular season game.
Coach, looking at your schedule this year, when you guys score 13 goals, at least 13, you haven't lost. When you score less than 13, you haven't won. With right. That being said, you look at the Syracuse defense led by Drake Porter, who's had his struggles as of recently. How do you hope to hit that 13 mark?
I think it really starts with the beginning, that first quarter. Getting that first goal when you're playing these types of games, and it doesn't matter if you're, if it's Syracuse, Notre Dame, you want to score that first goal. And I think the longer you go without that first goal, then you start gripping your sticks tight. So, we've unfortunately in those two losses, we've gotten off to slow starts, and we need to find a way to get off to a good start, and put the ball on the goal. We thought if we come out of the first quarter, with three, possibly 4 goals in the first quarter, it'll be a good confidence boost for us going into the rest of the game and kind of gets guys to settle in a little bit, and then be able to play their game without gripping their sticks too tight. So a good start definitely would help. And hopefully we'll get over that 13 mark.
On the other end, your defense has to stop a pretty prolific offense for the Orange. I saw an article, I think it was Kozar, but I don't remember exactly who, said that it's a more physical brand of defense that you guys are playing this season. What are the major differences on the back end this year to years past?
Well, I think we have probably our most athletic defense that we've had overall. Michael Kozar is like 6'3", 6'4", 200, 225, but he's a big, good athlete with good feet, and he moves very well and understands the game, communicates very well. Stephen Coons is like 6'2", 215, 210. Stephen is a fifth-year kid. He's our best communicator. Isn't quite as athletic as Michael or Elijah, but he's very, very smart defender, plays his angles well, knows when to slide. Like I said, our best communicator. And then Elijah Gash, I'm not sure anybody in the country has an athlete, as good as Elijah Gash on our end. Elijah's probably 6'4", about 210 pounds or so, 215, extremely athletic kid. Has the ability to get out and pressure and shut off and beat your hands and stuff like that. So our close 3 defensemen, and then our next 2 defensemen after that are very similar, maybe just a notch down below athletically, but similar in size, 6'5", And then the other are 6'3". So again, big kids, but also athletic kids. Our poles and Jake, again, he's just a little pit bull. He's all over the place. Tanner Hay is 6'5". He's got great length, picks off a lot of passes and gets up the field really well in our transition. And then we run a lot of defensive midfielders. We run probably 6 defensive midfielders that go out and play on a regular basis. We do play a lot of people. We play a good amount of people at the midfield between our offense and defensive guys. So, again, just some good solid athletes, and just we've done a much better job of communicating and playing stronger team defense this year, I think, than we have. You know, this is our third year with Coach Maloney, and these guys have now been playing with him for a couple of years, and I think they're really starting to get his lingo and his understanding of how he wants them to play. And they really, if you watch us play defense, we're a much more cohesive unit than we've been in the past. And then our goaltender Liam Donnelly has been a really really solid piece to our defense. And Liam's not only making saves, but he also gets our transition going. He throws the ball 40, 50 yards on a dime. So we get out and we get running as fast as we can. So, but I think overall, this is probably one of the best defenses we've ever had.
Liam is maybe one of the most interesting players in all of college lacrosse. He's well-traveled, starting at Rutgers, over to Utah, now back to Albany. And has had a really strong year. I asked Notre Dame's coach Kevin Corrigan before the last game this question, and I'm going to ask you the same one. Syracuse has obviously a highly touted first line midfield, some very, very high scoring attackmen. How difficult is it to decide who gets the short pole in a game with six guys on the field that SU can put on that can score from almost any angle?
I would say it's almost impossible, really. You know, we've go back and forth on it, but you have to think in a team defense, in a sliding defense, a lot of those matchups will change when they do go the goal. So we're really similar to what Notre Dame is. We're not really worried about matchups so much, and we're not worried about our midfield matchups so much as we are really on Steven Rafus, having Michael Kozar play Steven and try to keep him on Steven. But you know, midfield wise, again, they're also explosive. You have to be ready to slide. So I think it's hard to pick one or the other. You know, I think if you watch their games, you know, one game, you know, one will have three or four goals and the other will have a two or three. And then, you know, maybe the other guy's one, but you know, they spread it out so well. They're hard to defend, but we're going to do our best. You know what I mean?
Coach, this is to bring it back to the series as a whole, obviously a very fun series, a series we look forward to every year. To get the listeners fully into it, fired up, is there a memory you have over the decade plus of Syracuse Albany that you think encapsulates what this game means every year?
the first memory that comes up is, I don't know why, but this is the first one that came up, was in 2006, we had a young man by the name of Dan Barnes, who unfortunately passed away a couple years back. And Dan was our faceoff guy. He was also our captain on our football team. He was a linebacker on our football team. And he was a smaller guy. He was about 5'10", but he was probably about 225, 230 pounds. He was pretty jacked. And he just faced off. And he didn't practice with us a lot because he was in spring ball a lot and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, Dan made a play. We lost the faceoff. We won the faceoff ball, went backwards, and we're starting to clear the ball. And Dan has come running off the field, and he has his head down, and I'm watching, and I start to look upfield to see where we're going with the ball, and a defender is running up with the ball, and there's a Syracuse kid chasing him, and he was like he was on special teams. He came through, and he just crushes this kid and just basically just knocks him into our sideline, into our bench, and it was like – the whole place erupts, but I didn't see it. I was looking forward. So when I looked back, I thought Dan just had his head down and was running off the field. And boy, we made a big commotion of it and stuff. And we got all kinds of penalties. And I'm that's what I was saying before. I don't want the Dan to be a sideline show for me. That was a sideline show. So it was crazy. I mean, and then I go back and I look over at John, and John's like, he's like, Scott, he's like, no, he goes, he's telling me to stop talking. So it was pretty funny, but we've had some memorable games. Again, we've had overtime games there that we've lost, and you know, 2010 we lost in overtime. 2007 we were down by 9 goals, and we came back and and tied the game at 11 and end up losing, I think, like 14 to 12 or 14 to 11 or something like that. And again, I think, you know, when you play these types of games, it does bring out the best in your kids in the sense of how hard they compete and what they really have inside. So, like I said, it'll be a fun time, but it's always something. I'm sure we'll create another memory tonight with this. And then obviously when we beat them the first time, you know, when Lyle passes to Miles and Miles scores for the first overtime winner in 2013, that was probably my favorite moment in the Dome.
All right, well, let's leave it off with one final question here about, who's going to prevail in this game. I'm not asking you to predict it, but more if your team comes to Syracuse and ends up being successful, why would that happen? And if Syracuse ends up triumphing over Albany, why would that happen? A little like fill in the blanks.
Well, I think for us, again, it'll happen if we play a pretty clean game and we play a consistent game, you know, from start to finish. We can't have any lulls. You know, you can't allow them to go on those 3-4 goal runs that kind of break your back in the Dome, you know. And then, you know, for them, I'm sure, again, they're going to try to do the same thing. It's play a full 60-minute game, you know, and have to, you know, be consistent throughout the whole game and not have their own lulls, because it seems like they've gotten momentum in games and then they've lost it and have a hard time finding it again. So I hope that's the case for them, you know, but I hope for us, though, that, again, we just want to compete, you know. And I think if we compete and we play hard, you know, we do the right things with the ball, we'll be in the game in the fourth quarter.
Coach, thank you so much for speaking with us today. Really appreciate your time, and good luck at the Dome.
Thanks. Appreciate it there, Ben.
Thanks again to Coach Marr for joining us. Unfortunately, he saved all his hockey talk for after we were off. He pointed out Owen's jersey, but then once he saw my Toronto Maple Leafs poster, we discussed Brian Leetch and other things, but it doesn't get onto the pod. That's for behind the scenes, but a lot of great information about the Danes, this upcoming game between SU and Albany. And going to go to Owen first here and then to Johnny. Guys, what's the big key that sticks out for you?
Well, the big key that sticks out to me is, where else are you finding a podcast that's getting head coaches week in and week out? All right. That should be enough for you to hit the subscribe button wherever you're getting this. All right. Because this is, there's no one else putting out head coach interviews every single week. So the Ostrom Avenue podcast, your place for the opposing head coach week in and week out. But the key to this game for me is obviously not subscribe to the podcast, but you guys definitely should. But when you look at this game, you've got to go back to a conversation that we've circled multiple times. We've only done 2 lacrosse episodes this year, and it seems like it's been a focal point, and it is the face-off X. Syracuse has got to figure things out up there. You've got to start being, I'm not even asking for you to go at the clip that FOP was going at last season, or to go at those 60% clips. You just got to be 50-50 at this point. You've got to be competitive. You've got to give your team a fighting chance, because when you look at the possession discrepancies that you were talking about, that Desko was talking about, you're not winning games when you're getting doubled up in possessions. That is not a recipe for success. It's not a way that you are going to be able to stay competitive in these games. Albany is a team that could be a little forgiving in that aspect, but not much. Like, yeah, there's only so much that you can sort of get away with, even against, I'm going to say, a lesser opponent compared to the rest of the schedule that you've been playing. It's still a top-tier opponent. It's still a team that can expose you. If you don't get the simple things done, if you're not competitive at the faceoff X, you've got to be able to step things up, because the Orange will not win this game if they continue to struggle like they have at the faceoff X.
Yeah, and for Albany, they bring to the table a freshman Fogo, Reagan Endress. So it'll be obviously maybe his biggest test of the season, going up against a FOP or a Varello, who, granted, have been struggling a little bit, but he'll look to obviously right the ship for FOP especially. You'd hope that at least, if not for anything else, just from a confidence standpoint, that it's a bounce back game for Jacob Fopp going up against the freshman at the faceoff X. For me, though, I look at this Albany attack, and obviously no more to Hoke and Manticook, but that doesn't matter because, you know, this is an Albany team that can still score goals. And yeah, maybe they're a little more team oriented, as we heard from their coach just a few moments ago, but they know how to put the ball in the back of the net. Guys like Graydon Hogg, Jacob Patterson, they're really going to have to step up pretty big time. And in the games without Nanticoke this season, they've done so. And Albany has had no trouble winning games against other teams when Nanticoke is not out there on the field. Now, obviously, maybe they haven't done it against the same caliber of an opponent that Syracuse is. But at the end of the day, they have momentum on their side. And as I asked the coach before, you know, Syracuse does not have momentum on their side. And Coach Marr said, absolutely, that plays into it. The pressure is on them. So I'm curious to see, how does Brett Kennedy, how does Mitch Wyckoff, how does Peter Dirth react to this sort of new look Albany attack? And can they hold them at bay and allow the Syracuse attack to do their job on the other end of the field and give SU the lead that I think all three of us think they'll have, although I'm not too sure.
Well, we'll save our predictions for coming up in a few minutes. You know, the offense without De Hoga is really interesting because obviously, you know, former number one overall recruit, he's a fixated guy on SportsCenter top tens. Or fixture, I should say. He's constantly getting up there. But when they don't have De Hoga this year, 17 goals against UMass, 15 in the opener against a very respectable Colgate program, and then 13 against number 13 UMass. So sorry, 17 against UMass Lowell was the last game. 13 against 13 ranked UMass. It's obviously not Syracuse. They don't play anyone like Syracuse in their schedule except for the Orange themselves. But they've shown an ability to succeed without him. So I think a lot of the people on the outside coming into this game will think, no De Hoga, all right, this game is done. It's over for SU, or it's over for Albany. SU's going to take it. But Coach Marr isn't, you know, making some ridiculous or some cliche statement in saying that this team's offense is fine without De Hoga. They've proved it. And guys like Patterson and Hogg and Casey will really help Albany have a little more of a varied offense that I think can be a bit more difficult to game plan if you're Leland Rogers for SU. Going to the SU side, Owen, which guy or which facet of the game sticks out to you as Syracuse's key to try and defeat Albany here?
Did I give a Syracuse key when you asked me for an Albany key the last time around? Is that
you
what
might
I did?
Have. I'm now you're.
Did you ask me for an Albany key the last time I went?
I asked for an Albany key. Yeah, you gave an Albany key.
I got distracted by giving the subscribe to this podcast key, and I might have given you a double Syracuse key. But I'm going to get you – I'll give you a different key this time. So you'll put me on the spot, and I'm going to go strictly – I'll keep it simple. I want my key to be Drake Porter in this game. I think the offense is the offense, and they're not going to be – a unit that's consistently down, but I think Drake Porter is going to be the key to sort of controlling this game, minimizing runs. I remember, I think we talked with, it might've been Kark preseason of last year. And he was saying that Drake Porter's job is really just to limit runs, to minimize opposing teams' runs. And I think that's the key for Syracuse in this one is having Porter. He doesn't have to play this miraculous, unbelievable Herculean effort in net. He's just got to stop those runs occasionally. If you let up a 2-3 goal run, you can survive on that, but you cannot let up those 4-5-6 in the case of Notre Dame last week, 7 goal runs unanswered. I think Porter is the key to stopping that because that is his job. And as a guy that's being revered as a top tier ACC goalie, a top tier goalie in all of college lacrosse, I think that is a job that you need to be able to do. And if you're going to beat Albany, he's going to have to minimize those runs as well.
Yeah, 38% save percentage for Porter last time out against Notre Dame. Only 46 the week before that against Duke. A lot of those were when he was just hanging for dry on the doorstep and not a ton he could do. But nonetheless, definitely keep an eye on Porter. For me, Ben, I think Syracuse needs to get out to a hot start. Look, I think we all know that – on paper, this is the more talented team coming into the matchup. And yes, the pressure is on them. But I look at this Orange squad and I want them to come right out of the gate firing. Do not let Albany hang around early, because as soon as that narrative is created, and we all know how scary of a thing momentum could be, Syracuse needs to play a strong first quarter, get out in the open and score goals, whether it's in transition, whether it's when you set up your weave offense, whatever it is, just take care of business early, prove those doubters wrong, prove that you're still the ACC powerhouse staple that so many thought you were coming into the year. And then the rest should take care of itself for the final three quarters by keeping especially close eye on those opening stages.
Yeah, the second quarter especially, you know, has been a major problem for SU. You look at all three losses. Syracuse jumps out to a 6-1 lead against Army, 6-2 at the end of the first quarter, ends up trailing at half. It's a close game at Duke. The Blue Devils go on a 7-goal run in the second quarter, and then Notre Dame scores 9 in that second quarter, takes over by halftime, and really runs away with it in the second half. I think I'm going to go back to Jamie Trimboli, a guy I talked about earlier. I think his involvement in the offense is going to be huge. We pretty much know what Rafis is going to give on a day-to-day. Anything you get from Hiltz, despite how talented he is, he's still a freshman, so anything you get from him is a bonus, and Scanlon's been fairly consistent. What can Rafis do to get this first line, or not Rafis, pardon me, Trimboli do to get this first line midfield into the game? That's going to be very key, and we're going to bring it into predictions now, where I'm going to cop out. I'm broadcasting the game. I'm not going to predict the game because I'm broadcasting it. So I'm going to hand it off to Owen, and he can make the first prediction between Syracuse and Albany.
Very respectable of you, Ben. I definitely would have judged you if you gave a prediction here.
I learned from former Ostrom guest Stan Cotton, who decided not to predict it. So I'm not going to predict it either.
That's very good on you. I look at these games in the past sort of handful of years, and there have been some close ones in there, and then there have been some blowouts. I think this sort of falls somewhere in between, but a little bit closer to a close game than a blowout. I'm going to say a 4-goal Syracuse win, so I will say let's go 15-11. I think it'll be right in that range. I think Syracuse gets a comfortable-ish win, but I think Albany hangs around for a little while. As Coach said, as we've figured out, as you know, you've learned throughout the years, when you've got the history Syracuse does, when you're playing a game in the dome, a place where, you know, when in regular times you've got packed fan or packed seats, packed bleachers, even without as many fans in there, it's a place that you rise to the occasion. It's, you know, Syracuse fans are going to hate me for saying this. It's the Duke effect in basketball, where you've got fans coming out, where you've got teams want to rise to the occasion because of the history that Duke's had. That's sort of the case for Syracuse here. I think Albany is going to come out firing, and I think they can keep it close for a while. But I do think just personnel-wise, Syracuse has some bigger names, some better talent in this situation, and the ability to run away with it at the end.
I also think Albany hangs around. I don't think it's as close as you think it's going to be, Owen. I'll say 17-11 Orange. Look, this is a Syracuse team that needs a victory, however you cut it. They're hungry for a win. Two straight losses, really all their doubters coming out into fruition this past week. And look, this is a team that's been there, done that. They have experience on their side. We know, obviously, they're well coached by John Desco. Albany does know what they're getting into. Obviously, these two teams playing each other every year. So I don't think they're going to be so much caught off guard as they are just going to be a little overmatched. And I think Syracuse ultimately gets back in the win column. Maybe not the prettiest of wins as they experiment and fine tune with some new players that have seen a bit more of action as of recently. But at the end of the day, I still think the Orange get it done. 17-11 Syracuse over Albany.
Again, I won't predict, but I will say, don't be surprised if it's closer than you think, because the Danes have really turned this rivalry around in the last 7-8 years and made it, at least one that I think gives Syracuse fans like a little lump in their throat whenever you see Albany getting close. You know there's an opportunity. that they could take over and win the game. But that's all we got for this edition of the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Thanks again for Scott Maher joining us. We're going to try and keep the coach streak going. We've got two so far. If you're listening to us, North Carolina Athletics Department, I will email you soon. And hopefully we can make it 3 for 3. I'm on a hot streak. I'm feeling confident if we can get back to Corrigan on May 1st, we can get Corrigan again. And then we'll have 5 coaches in a row. But that'll do it. Thank you so much for listening to us today. Make sure to subscribe on YouTube if you're watching us. Actually, this isn't going on YouTube, so I guess I don't have to say that in this part of the episode. A little sneak peek for the listeners of us discussing the editing. But if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts or WAER.org or Spotify, make sure to go to the respective podcast provider, subscribe, leave us a rating, let us know what we're doing. Subscribe to us on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod, and make sure to tell us what you want to see in the next week's North Carolina preview / Albany reaction episode, and we will be sure to sneak it in there. For Johnny Gadamowicz, I'm going to get it right. I got it wrong. For Johnny Gadamowicz and Owen Valentine, I'm Ben Shulman. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next week.